Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Luke John Louis, the host of the Deep Voice Man Show. And today we have a treat in store for you guys. Our guest is Jim Essie. And Jim Essie serves as the president and CEO of the Temp Positions Group of Companies. It's one of the nation's largest regional staffing firms with operations in 9 states. It's a family business started by his father in 1962. Now, in full disclosure, I currently work there as a client representative, and I love what I do. And but Temp Positions is one of the few firms that offers a very broad range of workers across multiple skill categories, including, you know, office support, accounting and finance, education, healthcare, legal, IT, and hospitality. So Jim holds an MBA from Harvard University and worked in various product management roles at Clairol before joining Temp Positions 37 years ago. So we're very fortunate to have Jim here with us as a guest. He was able to carve out some time in his packed, busy schedule to sit down and have a chat with us. So we were very blessed. I guess to start off, can you tell us, Jim, more about your background and how you became a CEO of a wonderful firm called Temp Positions?
Well, Luke, first let me say I'm delighted we finally were able to make this happen. We've been talking about doing this podcast for a while, and my schedule has not been all that cooperative, but really happy to be with you right now. So talking about, you know, sort of my background, I guess, you know, you mentioned that my dad started a company in 62. So, you know, I grew up sort of hearing about this industry at dinner table conversations. As I got a little older, I would go into the office and help do payroll and answer phones. And so I've sort of grown up in the industry. And so I guess I'd always thought that I would get into this business. But my dad was pretty smart. And the advice he gave me was, don't come in right away, because if you come in right away, your ideas are only going to be learned from what we're already doing in the company. And instead, why don't you go work for some other people, go get an MBA, get a great college education, and then when you come in, you'll have a different perspective and hopefully be able to do things that we wouldn't have been able to do without that outside knowledge. So that's just what I did. Got my MBA. I actually had a business in college, and so I was able to get into Harvard right out of college. That was probably not the best move. They only took about 10% of the student body then were people who hadn't worked first. And in fact, today, almost everybody has to have 3 to 5 years of business experience. And I would say that was a little bit problematic for me because I really didn't understand the business world as much as I could have. And so my initial period there was sort of adjusting to understanding what I was sort of interested in. Was it finance? Was it marketing? Was it sales? You know, what sort of areas was I most interested in? And I kind of learned that with my summer intern job. But I did go out and do product management. And what's great about product management is sort of a general manager sort of a role. So you have to worry about all the aspects of putting a product out to market. So that includes, you know, sort of marketing, coming up with the idea, includes sales on how you're going to sell it into the stores. It's advertising, talk about how you're going to get consumer demand for it. There's research and development. There's manufacturing. So all of these different areas you need to know something about in order to make sure that you together can put out this product. So it was really great training ground for me. So I left there after 6 years, came into the company at that point. And one of the things you'll note, Luke, every day is one of the hallmarks. If you think about Clairol, those are the hair color and hair care people, now owned by a different company than they were owned when I worked there. But they had all these different brand names, right? And they were different positioning. So people who would buy Nice and Easy hair color were maybe different than the people who would buy Loving Care, or were different than the people who would buy Clarès. And when I came into the company, I said, you know, we need to compete with some of the larger players out in the market. And if we're just doing one thing, office support, for example, which is primarily what we were doing at that point, secretaries, receptionists, word processors, data entry folks, we will have a hard time differentiating ourselves. But what if we built all these different divisions and put people in who understood the division? So you work in office services, other people work in accounting and finance, other people work in legal, other people work in hospitality, as you mentioned, and all of those people become specialists in their area. And if we were able to then go out to the market and say to a firm, gee, we have experts who can help you in this area, but we also can help you in this area because we have other people who are experts in that area, we could become sort of a one-stop shop, a full-service operation. And so that's the model that we introduced here, and it's been working really effectively ever since. And we have right now, as you know, about 13 different brands that we operate under, all with sort of different positioning. So I guess it was in my blood that I was going to come into the business. I guess, you know, being in the family, I sort of thought I'd run the place. But I was always interested in sort of running whatever I was involved in. I still kind of do that. I sit on a bunch of boards and like to be a chair of the board or have some sort of a leadership role. So I'd always sort of expected that. And here I am. I've been doing it for 37 years, as you said.
Wow, wonderful. That's amazing. And thank you so much, Jim, for sort of sharing your story with us. It's interesting how you said it's in the blood. It runs in your family. Obviously, this is a family business that was founded by your father. But, you know, your father was a wise man because he wanted you to go out and get experience on your own, right, and not just follow along right away so you can
Yep.
have a different perspective. And, you know, I think that's amazing advice, and you're all the much better a CEO and a person in general for it, for doing that. And so it's interesting. So now you said that you had a business in college, if I heard you correctly, right?
That's right, yeah.
Oh, wow. So right away in college, I can tell you right now, when I was in college, I didn't really have a business, so to speak. So that's impressive. You had that entrepreneurial spirit. But you said right after college, you went straight to Harvard. And that you wouldn't suggest, you would, if you could do it over, you maybe would have done things differently. And now it's like a 3 to 5 year thing, you know, period where before you can apply, which sort of makes
right.
sense. But
right.
either way, you had that summer internship. You still got work experience. And I'm sure you learned a great deal at Harvard, one of the premier, still is one of the premier schools, business schools in the country, so to speak. And but obviously it was an adjustment you were able to make. Now, you worked in product management and learned a great deal there in terms of bringing products to market. Now, I'm not too familiar. I've heard of Clairol, but I'm not too familiar with makeup in general. I don't buy a lot of makeup, but you know, obviously, with makeup, there's a lot of different products, and you played a role in helping to develop products, market them. It's a whole process with product management. But then you went into staffing, and I think you took some of the same ideas in terms of wanting to diversify. Instead of offering, you know, firms just one thing, you could offer lots of different things, and that sort of helped temp positions to sort of expand, so to speak. And so that's amazing. And so now you guys do obviously hospitality, IT, legal. It's incredible. So the company is much bigger than I'm sure than it was before, with several different locations and whatnot. So it's quite an amazing story. And I can feel the passion in your voice for staffing. You know, I love talking to entrepreneurs and CEOs like yourself because you guys have that passion. It's contagious. And as someone who considers himself an entrepreneur, I love hanging out with you guys and talking with you guys and learning so much from you and being inspired by your story. So I'm curious. Obviously, you've been doing this for close to four decades, quite a long time, and loving it and whatnot. But I just wanted to know, how would you describe the current state of the staffing industry and what challenges, if any, has the pandemic posed? And how are things going since since that post-pandemic phase, we're sort of kind of in semi?
Yeah, so just for some of your listeners who maybe aren't as familiar with what staffing is all about, as we are, given that we do it every single day. But we operate a company that puts people out as our employees in our clients' work sites. So they come to us and say they need an accountant who's going to help them for a six-month project, and we'll find, interview, screen those people, and then send them off, and we pay them every week as our employee, and we charge an hourly rate to our clients, all-inclusive hourly rate for that, and we're responsible for all the tax reporting and handling the employer responsibilities for that individual that we put out. We do, in our company, we do somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 people a week. There's turnover in the job, so people come in to the being a temporary and then they leave, and then we have to find new people, and so we paid last year about 6,000 people. So that's a heartwarming thing to be able to find jobs for all those individuals so that they can feed their families and do whatever else they need. So the staffing industry, I think, plays a really important role. I think it has, but it's becoming more and more important as workers are harder and harder to find. Using a firm that specializes in that is a way for companies to be able to make sure they get things done. We like to say to many of our clients that, look, you're experts at what you do, whatever your business is, or if you're a government agency, whatever your charge is to do, but you're not in the recruiting business. That's sort of a side thing that you have to manage, why not take advantage of what companies are doing or entities are doing where they're outsourcing certain roles, right? No longer do companies run their own cafeterias or their mailrooms. They bring in best-in-class companies that run those for the entity in which they're cited. And so our comment is, well, let us do the recruiting for you. Let us find the people for you. In many cases, our temporary employees are taken on permanently by our clients. So it's a great way for people to get exposure to the client. But it also allows the client to get this influx of staff without a lot of effort on their part. They don't have to build big recruiting arms that they don't potentially have the wherewithal or the knowledge on how to do, but we as a staffing firm do that 24/7 and so have that ability to kind of get them whatever they need. In terms of the pandemic, as you can imagine, 2020 was a very challenging year for the entire industry. I mean, when business is shut down, you're not allowed to go into an office. It's sort of hard to send a temporary there. When in the hospitality sector, when all of the corporate dining facilities are closed because no one's going into the office, or there's no parties because people aren't allowed to get together, you can imagine there's not a lot of hospitality work that's out there. Schools, we do a lot in education. Schools are closed, so they didn't need substitute teachers. They didn't need school nurses. So in sort of all of our sectors were greatly impacted during COVID, and I think the industry generally had similar experiences. What we tried to do as a company, and I think, it's sort of people like you, Luke, that really build these relationships with a lot of the folks that we put out to work. They were feeling bad about these individuals who counted on us for an income stream, and we weren't able to deliver as a result of the pandemic. And so we all got together and pivoted. And so in many cases, we came up with opportunities for these people that were different perhaps than what they had been doing, but relied on their skills that they already had. So to give you some examples, when the schools were closed, it was very hard for the children of the frontline workers to have a place to go. And the frontline workers had to go in to work, but they needed some place for their kids to go if schools were closed. And so the Department of Education set up what they called enrichment sites around the city, which were sort of a daycare and a little bit of education, homework help, that kind of thing. And we took a bunch of our substitute teachers who we didn't need to put in the schools, and we staffed those sites. When the temporary hospital at the Jacob Javits Center was set up, we worked with the New York State Department of Health and transferred our school nurses into that program. When the mayor put in a meal program for 1 million meals a day to be delivered to the homebound during COVID. Homebound wasn't just elderly, it was anyone who wasn't supposed to be going out because they were, potentially more susceptible than others. We took hospitality workers, food prep people, and put them in preparing those meals. So it was a really interesting time where the industry generally was trying to pivot around to find where there were opportunities for staff, because that's what we do really well, is find, do the match between when there's a need for people and finding those people. So we did that matchmaking in a way maybe that hadn't been done before. And I think as a result, we were able to get a bunch of people out to work. So that was sort of good. But look, we're all glad that COVID has declined. It's probably going to be around, and so that will set up its own set of challenges going forward on how we'll operate as a society. But I think for the industry perspective, things are great because we're continuing to have demand to find opportunities for all different types of workers, and that keeps us busy every single day.
Wow. Thank you so much for that incredible answer. And there's a lot you said there. You talked about what staffing is, and just in case folks aren't familiar with the industry, and you mentioned the word matchmaker, right? So you sort of bring two parties together, right? An employer and then sort of like an employee, and you kind of handle that for clients. Right. So, yeah, I find it interesting that folks who are looking for work, they don't necessarily have to pay you guys for the services, right? It's the client who pays. So it's a great deal for them as well, right? So,
Exactly.
So, they don't have to pay a fee to find a job. So now, you talked a lot about how businesses are skilled at what they do, but things that they're not good at, they can outsource. And a lot of the most successful people do that, right? They delegate things that they're not great at, and they just dial in and focus like a laser on what they're good at, and they're all the more successful for it. Now, you mentioned how firms sometimes outsource, services for cafeteria, food, mailroom, and I think actually that's amazing. That firms can do this, so they don't that they can take this off their plate and focus on what they're good at. Now, it's interesting. You talked a lot about the challenges of the pandemic, and it seems like for a staffing firm, it was really scary, the picture you painted, right? And so, I'm sure a lot of folks who own a business who are going through these challenges might have freaked out and panicked, but you kept calm, and you tried to figure out ways to pivot, as you said. I find it interesting how you could have two types of businesses. They are similar, but one went out of business and the other didn't. And it's all because maybe one business was better at handling the change and figured something out. You kind of see that all the time. There's plenty of examples of that. And so, but you talked a lot about how you were able to take advantage of the enrichment sites, right? Which is amazing. And then helping out folks who were homebound as well, so you were able to find those opportunities even during that dire time period. So I think that's amazing and inspiring. And you talked a lot about the importance of relationships, and I'm a big proponent of networking and relationships. So I'm curious now, where do you see things in the future? I mean, where do you see yourself and the firm that you lead in that future?
Well, I think the industry is going to continue to grow. I think it's going to become more and more important. In fact, one indication of that is we used to be what was called a leading indicator of the economic health. So, companies, when they were starting to experience some problems, would lay off temporary staff along with cutting travel and expense budgets and things like that. But now we've become what's called a coincident indicator, which means that when we are weak, we're weak at the same time as the economy generally. And that's because so many of the workers that we provide to companies now are, sort of built in and a part of the fabric of that company. The company has their own staff, and then they use contractors or temporary staff on an ongoing basis as well. And so that sort of bodes well that we're sort of there and are in some cases growing in roles because we can find the talent better than the client companies can. And so in many cases, they use us as a entry point. People will start as a temporary, prove themselves, and then get hired onto the client's payroll. So I think that's going to continue. I think, you know, we'll have to understand how the remote work environment will work. We have a lot of projects now, to be honest, that we've never had before that are all remote work. We have 170 attorneys that are working for a government agency that we've sourced from all around the country. We used to, when they were on site, we had to source them just where that entity was located, but now we can source these attorneys anywhere to do the sort of work that they need. They don't need to be licensed in a particular state. Just in one state, they can be licensed anywhere around the country. And so the remote opportunities actually have opened up some channels that maybe we didn't have before. So I think that also bodes positively for the industry. So I think the future's bright. I will say that to anyone who's in the industry now or looking to get into the industry. I think it's a great place to be. And I think, you know, again, we're finding people jobs. It's a pretty basic necessity. And we feel good, I think, every day going home knowing that we found that many people jobs on that particular day.
Yeah, and it is great work, and it's very rewarding. You know, I remember one time during a meeting you mentioned the story of us helping us discover a job for someone who was about to be homeless, right? And
right.
It's incredible, you know. So this person was about to live out on the streets and join the vast homeless population that we have in New York City. But we as a firm were able to prevent that. And so, you know, that story always stuck with me and resonated with me. You know, when you think about it, a job is the only thing that keeps us from living out on the street for most of us, right? Most people, unfortunately, are living from paycheck to paycheck, so they really need that job and the money that comes in from it. According to some studies, a lot of families wouldn't be able to handle a $400 emergency, which is crazy. But so that paycheck is very, very important for a lot of folks. And so it's interesting. Now, obviously, there's always going to be a need for work. It's a basic necessity. So obviously, staffing is not going to go anywhere. And you mentioned how staffing firms like the one you lead and the one I work at, of course, the same one that you guys or that we are able to help folks, find businesses find employees better than they could on their own, which is incredible. So, and then you also talked about the trend of work becoming more remote, right? And the same thing, I think, happened with temp positions with the workers there, the internal employees, right? And I think at one point folks came to the office every day, but and then it went remote and then hybrid and then this, that. And so I think this is a common trend for firms. It's probably not going to go anywhere. I think people like the idea of working remotely, particularly if they have kids at home. In many ways, a great deal for them. But obviously, being in the office helps you build a culture, right, of camaraderie. And so there is something to that. I'm curious, Jim, you talked a little bit about this before, but about how we're matchmakers and how companies pay for the service that temp positions provides. But what would you say to folks who think that this is just the staffing industry is unnecessary? You know, you're paying for something that could be done by the firm itself. And you talked about the reasons before, but if you can just elaborate on that, you know, what would you say to someone who says, why pay for a middle person?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can look at it from both sides, right? Both perspectives, from the client perspective, the utilizing company, as well as the employee. So let's talk about both of those. I did talk a little bit about the client side, saying that, you know, in many cases, the client doesn't have the same recruiting resources that we as a full-time recruiting staffing company have. We have subscriptions to multiple job boards. We've got databases with hundreds of thousands of employees. We have, you know, big capabilities for interviewing and scheduling and doing all that stuff that, you know, most clients don't have. And so, we're sort of adding a degree of ease to them, especially in times of where it's difficult to find staff. But on top of that, we also serve as the employer of record for these employees, and so any claims that are made, claims on workers' comp, for example, or harassment claims, things like that, all of those are handled by the staffing firm, not by the client. So that eliminates that administrative burden that companies have. And then on top of that, all of the payroll taxes, all of the withholdings are made by our firm, not the client. So they don't have to worry about compliance with the Affordable Care Act. They don't have to worry about the quarterly 941 reports to the federal government. They don't have to worry about making unemployment insurance contributions on those employees. All of that is handled and taken away from their responsibility and put on the staffing firm. So lots of benefits to using a staffing agency, I think. And on the other side, for the candidates themselves, I always liken it to people to say, look, one, your interests are aligned with the staffing firm. The staffing firm only makes money if it finds you a job, whether it's a permanent job that they're finding you and they're collecting a fee as a result of that, or it's a temporary assignment where they're making money for every hour that they put you out to work. They want you to work more hours because then the staffing firm makes more money. And they want to find you the best job possible if it's a permanent placement because they'll make a higher fee. So all of that sort of works together. It's sort of like you have your own talent agent and you're not paying any cost for it. That's all on the staffing firm. They're collecting it from their clients. So why not take advantage of it? And think about it, staffing firms have thousands of clients that they're dealing with. Our firm has literally tens of thousands of companies that we interact with. And so we can put you out in front of that number of companies. There's no way you could do that yourself. You could send your resume, electronically to a bunch of clients, of companies, but you and thousands of other people are sending their resumes. So how do you get yourself distinguished? How do you stand out? We have that backdoor relationship, so we can get you in if we think you're the right match ahead of all these other stacks of resumes that they're, getting sent to them. So I think it's a terrific way for people to get jobs. And I talk to college students all the time and say you should be considering looking at staffing firms when you graduate so that you can try different industries, see what it's like, and then decide which is the, the best place that you want to land.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for that, Jim. You laid down a strong case, a strong argument, and I
Well, if I
don't think
couldn't do that
anyone
after 37 years in business,
could.
Luke.
Yeah, I could imagine. Of course, yes, a CEO of a staffing firm who's doing this for close to 40 years should be able to lay down a strong argument. I would think, yes, you're absolutely right about that. So you looked at it from both sides of the perspective. Obviously, it's best for the candidate because they don't even have to pay, right? So, so they're getting a great deal, and they get their resume shown to way more people, way more firms than they could do possibly on their own, right? And so because of the relationships a staffing firm has. And you talked a lot about how a staffing firm has resources, subscriptions to job boards, and a database full of employees in terms of helping out, the client firms looking for folks. So they're getting a good deal out of this as well, right? You help with the temp positions, help with the administrative burden, the withholding of the money, and from the they don't have to handle that. So temp positions is sort of like the employer of record, and they don't have to do all the unemployment, contributions and the
Right.
reporting to the federal government. And so I think for them, it's you might even make the case that it's an even better deal. So I'm curious now. Obviously, you've made a strong case. I think that can't be disputed about why staffing firms are necessary, why they're great. But I'm curious. Obviously, there's a lot of staffing firms out there, right, providing these kind of services. So I just wanted to know what competitive advantage do you feel that maybe temp positions may have over another staffing firm?
Well, I think there are a number of them. Again, what sort of a CEO would I be of Temp Positions if I couldn't, sort of give you an elevator pitch of why we're better? But I think, the first is the breadth of services that we can provide. So as I mentioned earlier, we're sort of a one-stop shop, so that no matter what type of staff member a company needs, whether it's temporary or permanent or temp to hire, we have the internal capabilities to be able to do that. So you don't have to say, well, I have one firm that I go to for my IT, and then I have another firm that I go to for my accounting help, and you're sort of coordinating all those different people, and each one of those a different contact, makes it really, really complicated. In fact, that's one of the roles that you specifically do, Luke, is that you, while you're in office services, if someone comes in and needs an accounting role, you serve as sort of the mouthpiece. You are an intermediary between the client and our accounting side, so that they don't have to talk to 20 million people, that they know who everybody knows who everybody is, and you sort of take that role over and make it a really easy connection for any type of skill to be delivered to that particular client. What sets us apart besides our broad capabilities, I think, probably is our approach to customer service. That, we've always sort of thought of ourselves as a boutique firm. We're pretty large, but we like to keep that small company red carpet approach still alive. So, we treat every client as if they're our only client. We assign individuals to speak with them. So whenever they have a need, they're calling a particular person. They're not just calling into an 800 number, and whoever answers the phone is going to try to stumble through how to deal with them. Some of the large firms are like that. We don't have a lot of turnover, so you tend to speak to the same people over and over, and they get to know you. And, years can go by where you're still dealing with, sort of the same management team, so they really understand the needs of your organization. We're also very committed to technology. We were one of the first, actually, I think, certainly in the New York area, but one of the first nationally to go with electronic time slips, like 15, 17 years ago now, where we felt it would much easier for our clients to have our employees fill out their time electronically. At the time, it was on a computer. Now it's on a handheld mobile device. But that allows those records to be tallied automatically, to be kept indefinitely. Very different than a paper timesheet where you have to photocopy it, attach it to an invoice, and send it to the client. And if they lose that, you've got to go make another copy. It's just very labor intensive and wastes a whole bunch of trees in the process. And we now have online ordering where clients can pick up their mobile device any time of the day and night and go in and put an order in and even see who worked there before. And if they see a candidate they like, they can just select that candidate. The system will go out and offer the job to that candidate. Candidate accepts on their phone. Clients notified. All of that could take place before the office even opened, so that the customer would have that feeling of confidence. They know that their job is filled. And so we use technology in a lot of different ways to sort of improve the experience and make it one that clients want to come back to. We don't want to be thought of as a necessary evil, but we want to be thought of instead as something they look forward to using, that they're dependent on us to handle their needs. And when we make that happen, we know that we've really delivered sort of an exceptional experience.
Wow. And so again, you laid down a very strong case for the competitive advantage of temp positions. And so obviously, I don't blame you. You're a CEO of your firm, so you know, of course, how to sell temp positions. And so you make a great case. You talked a lot about how temp positions is a one-stop shop. You offer a breadth, I think was the word that you use, of options for firms. And so they don't have to go to different places for different things. They can just go to Temp Positions for their accounting, their legal, their IT, their bartender, their secretary, their executive assistant, right? Am I missing anything? I don't know.
Yeah,
So,
I think you covered it.
yeah. So, and waiter and waitress, so they can go there. So it's interesting because obviously, so you have that one-stop shop, and very few staffing firms are set up this way. I would think probably most aren't, right? I don't have the exact percentage, but from my experience, I haven't really seen that until First heard about temp position, first started working there, and I thought, wow, that's amazing. There's a lot of different divisions. And you talked a lot about customer service, how important that is. You want firms to speak with one person, not speak with a whole bunch of different people when they call a toll-free number, right? I think that goes a long way in helping customers to stick with one firm. Not only are you offering several options, but you're giving firms this great, excellent customer service that they can't find anywhere else. So I think these are competitive advantages that are building on top of each other, right? And so I think that that's incredible. And you talked a lot about how there's not that much turnover because, you know, it's a great place to work, right? So, you know, my understanding is, you know, there are people, from what I've seen, obviously they're celebrating anniversaries that are, you know, 10, 20, sometimes 30 years, right? And
yes.
You don't really see that with a lot of firms, right? So, you know, I think if I can mention her name, I'll just say the first name, Evelyn, the front desk receptionist. My understanding, she just recently celebrated, from what I saw, her 34th year anniversary working at Temp Assistance. And I thought that's incredible. How many places have the receptionist, the same receptionist, right, for 34 years, right?
Yeah, she started when she was 5, I think, or something like that.
My goodness, that's not very common for one person who's working a desk job or to work at the same office, particularly here in New York City, for that long. You know, so obviously you're doing something right in terms of taking care of employees, and in turn what happens is they want to stick around, they want to stay, and then turnover helps to – in many ways, you know, lower turnover obviously helps to lower costs in the long term, right?
Right.
And
right.
So I think that it's a win-win-win, so to speak. And so you also talked a lot about technology, how you're always on top of technology, and that's a great competitive advantage. A lot of firms are very slow when it comes to technology. I know you're a big fan of video marketing, right? So,
right.
And video marketing is great. Like I can go on and on about how great, how effective video marketing it is, and very few firms use that, right, or utilize that, right? So that puts you a leg up, I would say, just doing that. So it's great. Kudos to you for taking advantage of technology in a way that other firms just choose not to for whatever reason, right? So now I'm curious, obviously we're in the business of helping people find work, which is incredibly gratifying and obviously very rewarding. So I just wanted to know, now we talked a lot of, you know, I mentioned the story that I heard from you during a meeting about how the person prevented themselves from being homeless because they found work through us. I just wanted to know, do you have any other maybe moving or entertaining stories from your life or career?
I think, you know, look, I think the most memorable experience that I've had was what happened with our company during 2021, as we were coming into the sort of vaccination phase of COVID. And that is that I mentioned earlier that we had supplied some nurses to the Javits Center Temporary Hospital through the Department of Health, the State Department of Health. And they, because of that contact, they came to us and said, hey, you know what, we're going to start opening some mass vaccination sites around the state. And we wondered if you would be able to be one of the companies that helps us with that. And we said, look, we don't want to just be one company that helps you with that, but we will build a consortium of 35 staffing firms of our trade association, the New York Staffing Association, of which I was, our company was a founding member. I was a president for a number of years. Serve as their legal legislative chair now. And we said, look, we'll come together and we'll fully staff all of the sites for you. We'll run it with a software that we develop. We'll distribute the jobs to all of the different staffing firms. We'll consolidate all of the schedules and send them to you and the National Guard every morning. We'll get the time captured. You can prove it once a week, whatever. We put this whole program together, $136 million contract. And, you know, you have to sort of paint the picture for everybody listening. This was a time when staffing firms, as I was mentioning before, were, you know, almost out of business. They had no jobs for their people. We have some hospitality firms in our membership. There was just no hospitality work, no waiters, no bartenders, nothing, no back office. There was nothing really going on for those back of the house people either. And so they were sort of, they could have gone out of business. And we were able to come to them and say, hey, we have greeter positions where you can greet people who are coming into a work to the vaccination site and send them to the right direction. We can have registration people that might be people who are out of work that have computer skills. They can get people into the system. We can take healthcare professionals, so nurses and pharmacists and EMTs, all of whom, some of them were available, wanted to help. We coordinated that effort. We built up to 5,000 people that we had out doing about 1.5 million vaccinations for the state. So when you talk about a rewarding project, here's a project that, one, got people, got staffing firms back in business, that, two, got a whole bunch of people who are on the bench for those staffing firms, got them back to work, and gave them an opportunity to do something really meaningful for them, and three, we were able to get 1.5 million people vaccinated and hopefully kept them safe as a result of this effort. So that's, I don't think anything can top that, Luke. I'm hoping that we won't have another pandemic where I'd have an experience that could even top that. I'm hoping that will be the highlight, that I won't come up with anything else that's more meaningful than that.
Wow, and thank you so much for that, Jim. And I don't blame you for having that feeling. Obviously, no one wants another flu pandemic, and absolutely not. And one is enough for this, I guess, you know, time period. And they say it's one every 100 years, so hopefully there won't be another one, at least for a very, very long time. And so you talked a lot about helping out with the mass vaccination sites. And you, and I noticed you have this all-encompassing mentality, right? You know, you talked a lot about making temp positions a one-stop shop, yeah, but you said, hey, we can fully staff, we can give you the technology, we can provide you with that, we can help you with the scheduling, this, that, and the other thing. So it's that, you know, all providing that all-in-one solution to folks. And, you know, I can see why temp positions has been so successful with your leadership, because you have that mentality of wanting to solve every problem that that folks may have, not just one, but offering a solution for everything. So, you know, that's amazing. And obviously, due to your leadership, you were able to get temp positions through that tough period, while other staffing firms were, may have, I'm sure, probably went out of business, right? I'm sure there's a few that didn't make it, and it was tough. But through your leadership and through your creativity, ingenuity, and innovativeness, you were able to kind of help the company get through that tough period and survive. So my hat is off to you. You're definitely an inspiration for folks, particularly entrepreneurs and CEOs. And I'm curious now, obviously you talk a lot about the importance of relationships. And one of the reasons why I started the podcast was to build relationships with folks. And I'm curious, what networking or relationship advice do you have for people? Because obviously networking is one of the top ways to find a job, right? So probably the top way. So it's very useful for job hunters to find this out. So I'm curious, what would you say to folks who want to have a better network?
I mean, I think basically networking is one needs to kind of shed their shell, and be willing to put themselves out there. I think that's the biggest problem. You know, if you go to a cocktail party or you go to any sort of an event, you have two options at that event. If you don't know anyone, you can stand in the corner and, you know, have a drink and look at the hors d'oeuvres as they get passed, or you can walk up to people that you don't know, who are many cases probably there feeling the same way, and just talk to them and get to meet them. And if you meet enough people, you'll find people who have interests or needs that you might be able to help. If you're looking for a job, you know, go to events that are frequented by people in the, you know, HR world. There are a whole bunch of SHRM, the Society for Human Resource Management, has a bunch of different events. There are lots of opportunities to get out there in front of people. And I think if you meet them in these sort of casual environments, you then could send a follow-up note and a resume, and at least they'll be able to put a face to that name, and they probably will say when you're, you know, sharing an hors d'oeuvre, oh, you know, you could be helpful for us. Send me your resume. You can reference that in your cover letter. So I think that helps. If you're looking for business, it's kind of the same thing. Go to areas where the people that you're trying to get business from will be, and don't be shy. Go up to them, talk to them, let them know what you do. If you're in the staffing business, you talk to them about, you know, the sorts of talent that you could provide to them. Might ask them what sort of challenges they're facing, and you know, sort of start with sort of a soft comment like that. Don't necessarily ask for business, but instead say, hey, you know, what's going on in your world right now? You're finding it hard to find people, and hopefully they'll say something like, oh, I got to tell you, I have three searches going right now. I can't find anyone. And you might then say, okay, what are those searches? And, oh, interesting. I know we have a bunch of people like that available for work. Could I, you know, maybe tell you a bit more about that? And so, you know, there are always opportunities for you to sort of get out there, meet people, as many people as you can, but try to focus your energies on those that potentially will have the greatest impact on what you're looking to achieve, and don't be shy.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that wonderful advice. And you talked a lot about, well, you mentioned in the beginning, it's important to shed the shell. So many people are very introverted. I consider myself an introvert. Some people might be surprised to know that, but I'm quite introverted myself. So I have to kind of make a conscious effort to go out and talk to people, and it doesn't come to me naturally, but I know the importance of doing it because I know your net worth is tied to your network, so to speak, and you got to go out and talk to folks, not stand in the corner looking at the food and looking all weird and stuff, but other people are probably doing that, so you can, you know, go up to them, make a joke about it, you know, and how weird everyone's acting, maybe, and that might be a great way to break the ice, and you know, it's funny. What's helped me is that I usually do a lot of my networking online. I go on LinkedIn. That's how I find a lot of folks to come on the show as guests. But obviously, nothing will ever take the place of in-person networking. There's just nothing like it, right? So it's hard to put words to it. So nothing will ever replace networking in person. Now, obviously, that was something that also declined during the pandemic, but is now coming back, these networking events. Which I'm all for it, so that's amazing. But networking is great for someone who is looking for work, someone who's looking for employees to work at their firm, and for businesses looking for clients as well. Networking could be very obviously very helpful to
right.
them.
Yeah. Right.
So again, thank you so much for that excellent advice. And since we're on the topic of advice, I'm curious, what advice would you give to folks who are looking to work in the staffing industry that were listening to you and they're pumped and excited, you know, I want to help people find jobs. I mean, what tips would you give them?
Yeah, I mean, I think one, the staffing industry is a great place to work. There's something that you can do every day to make you feel good because regardless of the role that you play, if you're in sales where you're going out to develop opportunities to find clients that need staff, then because of you, people are going to get jobs and are going to make money and be able to support their families. If you're a recruiter and you're finding people for those jobs, then again, you have a direct involvement in helping those people move forward because of your efforts. So I think both of those would say it's, you know, kind of a really rewarding type of a role. I think if you want to get into a staffing firm, I'd get onto a bunch of their websites. Many of them will list their opportunities that they have internally. And I'd learn as much as I could about that particular company and then be able to come up with some talking points as to why, one, you're interested in staffing generally, and two, why you are especially interested in that particular firm. And then three, I would think about what you've done in your background that would make you good for this particular role. If you are looking for a sales position, you need to talk about things that you've done. Now, you don't have to have been a salesperson, but you could have been in things that allowed you to convince people to do things or gotten out in front of people and motivated them to make something happen. Those are all good qualities. Team sports is another one. If you can say, you know, you were very active on your team, you led your team, you were captain of your team. Those kinds of people can motivate people through it, and I think are, you know, tend to be good sales folks. On the recruiting side, you could talk about, you know, your ability to empathize with people, your ability to understand their needs. What have you done in your background that would put you in a position like that, where you sort of be able to help someone? Maybe talk a little bit about your technological skills, because you'll need to do a lot of searching on the internet to find candidates, using a lot of job boards, using social media. So talk a little bit about your expertise there. But I think all of that combined should get you in a place where you could, you know, sort of be very successful in getting yourself a role in a staffing firm. Now, look, you know, while we're talking about that, we should look on the other side is why should a, you know, what is, should a client look for when they're looking for a staffing firm? And I think sort of similar things in a way, right? When they're meeting that salesperson, they should try to figure out, well, from that staffing firm, what we talked about it before, what differentiates this firm that I'm talking to? Why are they going to be able to help me better than the 27,000 other firms that I've talked to? What can they specifically do? What can they demonstrate? I push on that salesperson, gee, this is the type of role I need. Can you tell me some examples of what you've done in that particular role before with other clients to give me confidence that, in fact, this is something that you could do? So I think you want to sort of push and check the background of the particular firm that you're looking at to be sure that it can really deliver what it says it can deliver. And then you might want to understand a little bit about how it can deliver that. What sort of resources does it have in terms of staff? Learn a little bit about the recruiters. What are the backgrounds of the recruiters that you'll be working with to be sure that it looks like, yes, they have experience in recruiting for this particular type of role, again, tied to things they've done in the past. So I think, you know, you sort of really want to validate, sort of you're going to hear some things, so you want to be able to trust what you hear, but at the same time, that whole, that expression, trust but validate, but then you want to ask people to defend what they said by giving you examples of why you should feel that they can deliver for you. So both a good place for people to work and clients should sort of test the statements that are made to be sure that what they're hearing really stands up to what the experience of the firm actually is.
Wow, and thank you so much for that. And, you know, that was a great answer. As you write, I jot down and take notes of everything you say. I always do that. I'm a note taker. And so it's interesting. You mentioned that a person doesn't necessarily have to have a specific type of experience. Maybe they worked in team sports, right, and they were a captain, or maybe they worked in customer service, but they could still excel in staffing, right? You know, it's funny because when I applied for a role like that temp positions offered, it's interesting. I actually didn't initially apply for a temp positions role. I applied for one of the clients, that temp positions was helping out. And I think what happened was they didn't take me because I was overqualified. So, I have an MBA of all of this. But what happened was, I think Christina, who's my direct supervisor, she noticed my education and noticed my experience and that I worked in customer service. So I didn't have a lot of experience working in staffing, so to speak. But I was invited to apply for an internal role. That was even better than the role that I had applied for through the client working with temp positions, so to speak. And then, you know, it worked out great in the end. I got to work for, and I'm currently still working at temp positions, an amazing firm, not the best job I've ever had, hands down. Great company, great culture, and so I can understand why the turnover is low. You know, I'd love to work at temp positions, obviously, for years to come. I don't really have any plans to leave anytime soon. And, you know, most people, they stay at a job for a little bit, and then they job hop. I don't really see that really happen. I don't see folks doing that so much at temp positions, which is amazing. So, so it's interesting. Now, you talked a lot about it on the client side, right? And obviously, you had mentioned before the competitive advantages that temp positions has, and what temp positions has to offer folks, right? And what differentiates. But whenever a client is talking to a sales rep, they should always have those probing questions, right? You know, what kind of recruiters are there? What this, that, and the other thing? What do you guys offer? What makes you different from the other? I think you mentioned 27,000 other staff. Is it that many, really? I have no idea. But maybe it is. I have not a clue. So you really have to stand out if there's that much competition, I would imagine. My goodness. So just great advice and tips. I'm curious now, what advice would you have for someone who is not necessarily wanting to work in staffing, or a client who's looking for a staffing firm to work with, but what advice would you have for someone who wants to work with a great staffing firm? Obviously, they don't have to pay, so they can work with as many as they want, but if they had to start with, obviously you want to start with the top ones first, and how should a person go about looking for great staffing firms to work with? Like, what is the process?
Yeah, I mean, I think that kind of was what I said, that, they want to, I mean, you can do a bunch of things. One, you can do a Google search and come up with a list of staffing firms, right, and start cold calling them, or look at their websites and look at their testimonials and kind of get a sense, are they advertising for roles that are similar to what you have? So if they are, they must have some experience in that. Or, as I said, you get these clients are getting millions of calls from salespeople all the time, staffing from salespeople looking for opportunities or emails. They can reply to those emails or calls and put, sort of interrogate, if you will, the salesperson to find out what's special about their firm. I think looking for the whole host of things we talked about, experience in doing the job, types of people they have that are going to be able to deliver the job, the approach to customer service, the use of technology, the overall experience, how is it all handled? And typically, I think one will be impressed with one firm and they'll be less impressed with another. And I think they should go with their gut after they've talked to a few places. And I would not say that they should hire bunches of firms, though, by the way, because the minute a staffing firm feels like they have a small chance of success because they're competing with six other firms for every role, they're going to say, you know what, we don't make that much an hour. We're only getting a small profit per hour. If we only have a small chance to win that role, we're not going to put a lot of effort into that. We're going to put effort into roles where we know that we're going to get that position. So I would urge most companies to try to only give the order to one company, whoever they choose. If that company can't deliver, then sure, find another company. But if they can deliver, I don't think having them compete is going to, in the long term, get loyalty on the part of that staffing firm. They're going to say, look, there's limited number of people out there. We have limited number of recruiters. We're going to work on the ones that we know we're going to be able to deliver on, not ones that, we might get some other staffing firm will win out, and then we've wasted all this time. We've made no money, and we're simply going to have to then go on to the next one.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that. Obviously, your answers provide more insights in just the whole entire industry in general and what folks on both ends, on all ends of the spectrum, all sides should do. So thank you so much for that. It's given me a great perspective. Now, I'm curious, we've been talking about job hunting and whatnot, but what job interview advice and maybe perhaps resume advice would you give to folks? We know how so important the job interview is.
Right.
From your experience, like what tips would you give folks?
I should almost porcupine the question back to you because I bet your team talks about that with their candidates all the time. But, you only have, what do they say, you have a couple of seconds to make a great impression. And so I think that's really important on a job interview. So number one, you want to be, if it's, whether it's a Zoom interview or an in-person interview, you want to be on time. Don't be late. Click into that call a couple minutes in advance. Be there. And make sure, little things, if you're doing a Zoom call, make sure that you're centered in the screen. I can't tell you, I've personally interviewed candidates where all I see is their forehead, and it's like, could you move the camera down so I can actually see the mouth that's making those words that I'm hearing coming from you? But set that up in advance. Have a nice little background. If you're, even if you're in your kitchen, perhaps don't have it focused on all the dirty dishes that are sitting in the sink, but try to find a blank wall behind you or use a background screen that's there. Make sure you're prepped on the company. So you should have read the website and really understood what that company does, and actually be prepared to maybe talk a little about that. You're really interested in working with XYZ company because you're so impressed that they do X. So have that prepared, those word tracks ready to go. If it comes up in the conversation, if it doesn't come up, try to work that into the conversation. Make sure that in that interview you focus on why you're going to add value to that company. So you can restate the job that they're looking for. You might say, "Gee, I think I understand that you need someone who's going to do this, and also you're looking for someone who can do this. And let me tell you why I think I'd be great at that. I have this prior job, or I have this college experience, or I have this high school experience where I did this. And as you can see, that's very similar to what you're looking for. In fact, I was able to excel when I did this. I sold more, books than anyone else sold, whatever." And so look for things in your background that would help that client understand why you'd be a good fit for that role. Answer the questions that they ask, but use those questions as almost an open window or an open door to get in some other points you want to make sure they know. So, someone might ask you about what are some of your best tasks that you've done in this particular area. Can you give some examples? And after you talk about that, you might then recognize that there's another task that is in this job description that sort of you weren't covering. And you could say, "Well, I also am really good at doing this. I'm very detail-oriented. In fact, I kept the books for my sorority and did this kind of work." So again, they can see that you have all of these qualities that they've put in their job description, and you're feeding that in so that they know that, in fact, you can help them in those areas as well. So very focused on making sure you've proven your case. It's almost like you're in a courtroom. You want to prove your case that you're the right person for this job. Be very prepared in terms of what the company does, what your role would be, what your background is that fits with those roles. And also smile a lot. People don't like scowly or, very serious people. I think you want to sort of try to build a rapport in that 30 minutes or hour or 15 minutes, whatever you have for that interview, and try to make them think that you're someone they'd want to be able to talk to every day because you're so pleasant.
Wow, that's amazing advice, and I consider myself a smiler. So, I'm sorry, I'm all about smiling. So, thank you so much for that wonderful advice. You talked a lot about showing up on time, not being late, being centered in Zoom. So these are like simple, basic things, but you'd be surprised how a lot of people don't know the basics, right? And so you can put yourself stand apart by just doing these simple things, right? And then you talk a lot about how during the interview how you can add value. You talk about your background, examples from your past that put you obviously in a good light. It's like you're in a courtroom trying to make a case, and you obviously do the prep work. You find out what the company's about, go on their website, do as much as you can when in regards to that. I'm curious, Now, you've given us some great advice when it comes to job interviews, but just in general, just from your time on earth, so to speak, from your experience, you know, from Clairol, the temp positions, from growing up, I mean, what important life lessons would you like to share with folks that you've learned yourself or from others?
You know, I think there's only one life lesson that I'd share. It actually came from my dad. But it served me so well in so much of what I do, which is if you're going to take on a job, then make sure that you really want to do that job and you deliver on it. So I'll give you some, you know, sort of personal examples that I've sat on a bunch of not-for-profit boards. And in many cases, there are people who join the board and, you know, they're lending their name and maybe they'll try to raise a little bit of money from their friends for that board. But in terms of helping the organization grow and in helping them figure out the challenges and how to get around challenges they're facing, a person doesn't come to board meetings, is, you know, quiet in the board meeting, looking at their phone, doing other things. To me, that's, you know, why take that on at all? You're sort of wasting a role that someone else could be in who could help that particular organization move forward so much further. So if I personally am asked to do something, I have to weigh, given how I want to contribute, do I have the time and the energy and the interest in really delivering for that particular role? And if I don't, then I shouldn't take it on. And that's really served me so well over the years. As a result, I've, as I said, you know, have been chairs and presidents of lots of organizations and helped them move forward. But I've also turned down things that I felt, look, I can't really, I either don't have the time or I don't have the commitment or I, you know, can't move the needle the way that I think it should be moved. So I'm probably not the right one. And I think that's true in a job that someone takes as well. If you're not 100% invested in that particular role, don't just go in to earn a paycheck. You spend so much of your time in your job, you should be involved in something that really gets you excited. I mean, I remember my very first job after I graduated business school, actually in my summer intern, I couldn't wait to get to the office every day. I just loved what I was doing. There was a group of people there that we would stay late and we'd talk about how we were going to take over the organization and be the senior management. We knew so much better than they did. We probably didn't know much better than they did, but we had this camaraderie that was going on because we absolutely had a passion and we loved what we did. And if we didn't have that passion and we didn't love what we did, we probably wouldn't have done as good a job, and that would have been a disservice to ourselves and also to the organization. So that's my my long answer, but with just one life lesson.
Absolutely, and I love it. And obviously, I can tell you've learned a great deal from your father, who was a very wise man, and who gave you that life lesson, and the idea that you have to want to do the job and deliver, over deliver, right, and be excited about what you're doing and be 100% invested in the work that you do because you're spending so much time at it. And yep. You talked a lot about that example from your own life when you had that summer internship and you and some other folks were so excited. You had that camaraderie, you wanted to take over the world. Maybe perhaps you thought about that as well. I'm sure. So, that's amazing. And, I'm sure, you know, your father is probably very proud of you and what you've accomplished and what you've done with 10 positions, I'm sure. So, that's great advice that I'm going to follow. You know, it's interesting how so many people, you know, they say they hate Mondays, right? And I talk with a lot of folks, but, you know, if you really like your job, you shouldn't really hate Monday, right? You should enjoy Mondays if you really love your job. You know, if you don't love, then why do it, right? Why spend so much time?
Yep.
You know, you should, you know, so exactly there is something to that. Right. And yep. And if you like what you do, then you never have to really work a day in your life. And so I try to
believe. Or at least
it
doesn't seem like what you're doing is work, right?
Yes.
Right.
That's correct. So it's interesting. So Thank you so much for that. I'm curious now. Obviously, you're a man who's you've learned quite a lot from your experiences. You've been to Harvard. You've been to Clairol. You obviously have been leading and helming the at the helm at of a large staffing firm and whatnot. So I wanted to know what book recommendations do you have for folks? Like, what books have you read that would be that you would suggest to people if you were if you had like a list?
Yeah, I think that business books, if you want to talk about sort of business or motivational books, are all very specific on the type of business you're in, the type of problems that you might be experiencing. Do you need help on strategic planning? Do you need help on management? So I sort of always shy away from giving a recommendation because, I don't know what one's particular situation is, but I would urge one to go to a, a bookstore in the business section and sort of read the covers and see, if they're talking to you. They're talking about an issue that you would love to have them solve. I will say that there are two sort of ancillary books that I have used over the years that I think are just tremendous and would urge anyone to who's thinking of, sort of a higher position growing into a leadership role or is already in a leadership role. One's called The 1-Minute Manager by a guy named Ken Blanchard. Been around for a long time. It's very quick read. Maybe it's 60 pages or something in big print. But basically, the idea there is it gives you techniques on how you can help improve your employees when you see something that happens, and you should do it right at the moment and do it just for a minute. And then move on from there. Some very good advice in that book, so I'd urge people to take a look at that. And the other is it's surprising how many people write business communications, and it's becoming even more important now as we're using email and text so frequently. And so many of those communications, in some cases, are misunderstood or seem to misrepresent the position, and people get pissed at what they read when you didn't really mean to upset them, or they don't quite understand what you mean. And so I would urge people to find a book on business writing. There's a book called The Essentials of Business Writing that I think is pretty good. There are a number of them that are out there. But spend a little time on that because that form of communication, when we're especially now doing it through mobile devices, is really an art form, and I think if one improves that, a lot of what they do will be improved as a result.
Wow, thank you so much for those book recommendations. You initially said that obviously you don't normally recommend books because you don't know a lot of them are specific to a certain business or niche or whatnot, and you don't know what a person's situation is. So,
Right.
but just generally speaking, the books that you like. Or 1-Minute Manager. I've definitely heard of that book, but haven't read it yet, which is surprising. I read a lot of personal development books. Definitely want to check it out. And you mentioned the Essentials of Business Writing. Definitely want to take a look at that. Now, have you ever thought about writing a book yourself?
I have, but I don't know when I'd find the time. So then people have offered to ghostwrite the book for me, and then I've sort of thought, well, but then it's not my book. Gets back to if you're going to do a job, you should do it well yourself. So at some point, maybe. But right now, I just like sharing those experiences with people like you, Luke.
Well, thank you so much for that, Jim. It's interesting. Obviously, writing a book does take some time. I actually wrote and published my first book this year. It's a short, fast read, and obviously, it's one of those things where you have to maybe, perhaps, you have to set a goal and then an outline, and then it's one of those things where you have to kind of you have to plan it out, so to speak. But obviously, you're a CEO of a large firm. So time is not one of the things that you have in abundance, of course. So I can imagine it's a little tough, and I can understand where you're coming from with the ghostwriter thing. It's like you want it to be your book, obviously. So I'm curious, though, are you? I always give people this question, but I think I already know the answer, but I'm going to pose it to you anyway. Have you ever thought about starting your own podcast?
Yeah, I mean, look, I can, you know what the answer there is, and you know how difficult it was just to get me coordinated to do this wonderful session with you. And so multiplying that so that you have, you know, numerous guests on an ongoing basis, that's a lot of work. I will say I did a talk show when I was in college on radio that I enjoyed doing a lot. I've done some television. I did, there was a guy named David Susskind way back in the day, and I was on his show. So I enjoy public speaking. I enjoy getting out there. But I think having that commitment on an ongoing basis is daunting. And so I give you a lot of credit for being able to do that. I don't know that I would. I was chairman of the American Staffing Association for 1 year, and so we have a magazine that goes out to our membership once a month, and so I had 12 letters that I had to write, and that was a big challenge to get 12 letters out that I could write in the foreword of this magazine each month, talking about, you know, some issue of the day. So it is hard to find the time to do it, and I have so much admiration for people like you who can do this, especially when you have a full-time job on top of it. I think your listeners should know that you were so dutiful on this. You said, well, you know, I can't do this call during the day because I'm working, so we're going to do this at night when I get home. That just shows, you know, you have two full-time jobs that you're working on, more than I think I can handle.
Yes, and I totally get that, obviously. I'm curious, do you listen to any podcasts?
You know, I probably should listen to more than I should, or than I do. I probably spend more, you know, look, I'm a different generation, so the concept of a podcast is, while I think it's a great thing, it's a little bit foreign in that I don't sit and have earbuds in my ear a lot, listening to stuff. I probably watch more news shows and stuff than I listen to podcasts, but I do feel there's some good value. We have a number of staffing podcasts that I've participated in and listened to every now and again. But I'm probably not an avid. I think I maybe have two or three on my phone, but that's it. I probably don't have a lot that I regularly listen to.
Okay, I totally get that. Obviously, this has been a wonderful conversation. I know you wanted to schedule it for an hour, but it kind of went over, and that's typical, you know, when people are talking about themselves and what they're passionate about. And it always goes more than 1 hour, because, this is the norm. So can you please just go ahead and, you know, just mention all the ways that people can get in touch with you and network with you.
You know, I think the easiest way is to go onto our website, temppositions.com, temppositions.com, and go to About Us and Leadership Team, and you'll see a outmoded picture of me wearing a tie. I don't wear ties anymore. We really should get rid of that picture, but click on that picture, and it gives you ways to contact me either through LinkedIn or email, and we'll be happy to reach out back if you reach out to me.
Wonderful, amazing, and thank you so much for sharing that. Obviously, the information you just told us, I'll have that listed in the show notes so people can easily access it there and whatnot. Thank you so much for that. And again, you know, I want to thank you for being a guest on the show. I know it ran longer than you expected, and I really appreciate you staying on longer than an hour. And you know, it's been a wonderful, amazing, enlightening, and entertaining conversation. I'm sure the listeners feel the same way. So, do you want to leave us with maybe a last word or final send off?
Well, I think, you know, again, what sort of a CEO would I be if I didn't say to any of our listeners out there who are looking for a job, I urge you to visit our website that I mentioned, temppositions.com. And if you go up on the top of that website, there's a section that says our divisions, and you can look through all the different types of divisions that we have, find one or two that are interesting to you, and then you'll be able actually to apply to that particular division, and even you can select some of our open jobs that we have available. So reach out there. And if you're a potential client who's in need of staff, I urge you to visit our 10positions.com site. Again, you can look at the particular divisions to see how we can help you. And then you'll see there's a little button to click on each page that says Find Staff. For our employees, they click the Find Work button, but for clients, they click the Find Staff button. And let us know a little bit about what you're looking for, and we'll get back to you and tell you how we can help.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that. Again, thank you for being a guest. And for everyone else, thank you for joining us and listening all the way through. I'm going to be seeing you guys in the next episode. Everyone, take care and have a wonderful day.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Hey, guys, before you go, just real quick, if you can just do me a favor, if you can head over to the Apple Podcast app, and if you're not there already, and if you can leave me a 5-star review, that would be great. If you love the show, if you can just go ahead and do that, and that will help to spread the word about the show, and other people can enjoy the show as much as you do. And so if you can do that, that would mean the world to me. And also, if you want to email me with any feedback or any praise or support, please feel free to go ahead and do that. And you can also email me to request to be put on our email list. So we can send you out emails when new episodes come out. So thank you very much for being a fan of the show. Thank you for listening to the show and supporting the show. So if you can do that, go out and give us a 5-star review on the Apple Podcast app. That would be great. And if you can email us so we can put you on the email list and email us with feedback and praise, that would be amazing. Thank you so much, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. Take care. Bye-bye.